Hey everybody, what is up? It is Jeff from Modern Combat and Survival, and welcome to podcast episode number 304. Now this week I'm bringing some old school to the new school with a top 10 list for reasons why you should really think about the benefits of a revolver over a semi-automatic pistol for your home and personal defense arsenal. Now, if you love snubbies and wheel guns, then this is the episode for you. And if you have no idea what I just said, then this episode is really for you because you're about to discover a powerful new addition to your personal defense plan. So sit back, relax, and let's check in with my revolver guru, Michael DeBethencourt, as he lays out the realities of revolvers. And hey, don't worry about taking notes because we've done all the heavy lifting for you with this week's free show notes, including your handy-dandy one-page cheat sheet covering all the main points. All you have to do is head on over to www.mcsmagazine.com/304 and download it all absolutely free. And now, let's talk tactics.
Tactical firearms training, urban survival, close quarters combat.
This is another podcast to help you better prepare for any threat you may face in your role as a protector and a patriot. This is Modern Combat and Survival.
Just the other day, I saw an article on social media that actually asked the question, is the defensive revolver a fad or is it here to stay? Now, I had to blink a few times and wonder if I hadn't just climbed out of my DeLorean after traveling back in time, maybe a few decades or so, because I thought that question was one of those gun magazine debates from like back in the Stone Age. Now, believe it or not, though, people do still argue about whether the revolver is a viable defensive weapon choice. The alternative, of course, is a semi-automatic pistol, but what if I told you that, for a lot of reasons, a good revolver can actually beat a semi-auto for daily defensive carry? I know, sounds like tactical blasphemy, right? Well, today's guest has a whole lot of reasons why he feels a revolver, and particularly the snub-nosed revolver, deserves a second look as your defensive weapon, and he's here with us to back it up. Hello, everyone. This is Jeff Anderson, editor for Modern Combat and Survival Magazine, with another podcast to help you better prepare for any threat you may face in your role as a protector and a patriot. And with us today to discuss that issue is revolver expert Michael DeBethencourt. Michael, welcome back to the program, man.
Well, good afternoon, Jeff, and thank you for inviting me in here. Let's see how well I can do for you and all your listeners.
I know. I always have faith in that. An ex-carny has no problems with entertaining my audience. So, yes, I do know your extensive background here. For those of you the people that don't really know Michael's background, though, or haven't listened to one of our other podcasts or our masterclasses with Michael, his training resume is a very lengthy one and specializes in courses on the snub-nosed revolver, weapon disarming and retention, and folding knife skills, both for law enforcement officials and legally armed civilians. Now, Michael is over a 30-year student of martial arts and a 20-year student, over 20-year student of police defensive tactics. Now, he's also a nationally recognized defensive revolver, weapon disarming, and improvised weapons trainer, and an internationally recognized knife instructor and trainer as well from his past. But his latest work has been in expanding the awareness of, well, his specialty in snub-nosed training as well as other shooting skills with a new organization called I'm With Roscoe, which is a noir-themed association. It's a shooting association that's like a combination of Pulp Detectives meets cowboy action shooting. Now, the whole point of this organization is really to, yes, better your defensive shooting skills, but also have fun doing it with a lot less practice, a lot less rounds downrange. Now, to learn more about Michael and his training and the new association, you can visit him online at www.imwithroscoe.com. And that's R-O-S-C-O-E.com, imwithroscoe.com. All right, Michael. So given that, I don't think there's anybody else who's more qualified to talk with us about the revolver and kind of trying to get people to, I guess, open back up to this, right? This was something that was just tried and true because that was all you had were revolvers before. But it's kind of taken a backstage to a lot of semi-automatic pistols. Now, you've come out with lots of documentation, you've written for magazines and everything else about the advantages that people should really look at with a revolver and why, in many instances, it can actually beat the kind of the what people consider to be the tried and true and the only choice for a defensive weapon of a semi-automatic pistol. So my challenge here was, I know you've come up with, you have like a whole laundry list of reasons why the revolver can actually beat an auto, but I wanted to get kind of maybe your top 10 or 10 really good ones here that might get people to really open up their eyes again to why a revolver might be a really, really good choice for them for defensive carry. So I'm just going to kind of leave it over to you. We've got a top 10 list going here. So what is number one on your list of the reasons why a revolver can beat an auto?
Oh, if I had to pick a top one out of, as you said, a laundry list is, and I'll bring in full circle in a moment, it's a fun gun. And let me back that up a bit. I get to travel a great deal, and we run into a lot of competent, exceptionally skilled firearms instructors. Invariably, when they find out that I'm a short barrel revolver aficionado, is a lot of denigration. People will pick up your spent brass and note you have dinosaur droppings. The problem with that is that it even exceptionally skilled firearm handlers are willing to be completely dismissive of a weapon that not only has a very storied history as a self-defense tool, but is still daily being used by, if not millions, tens of millions of human beings. Now, as an instructor, when I would have people with whatever tool that came in, it was a personal choice, it was a department choice, my first job was not to denigrate it. And my second job was to make sure that someone who came into a class with whatever particular piece of equipment left more competent and better trained than they walked in. I didn't want them walking out thinking that they had substandard equipment or they couldn't get the job done, when historically that has never been the case. That being said, the first job to get people to be comfortable with the weapon and to recognize that it is an absolutely vital self-defense tool is that it has to be fun to shoot. And I would argue that there are so many nuances and bits of equipment and unconventional drills and, quite frankly, an amazing number of vanishing tricks that go into all that has gone before it, into making the revolver a self-defense tool, that when you introduce people to some of these elements and they really appreciate how much they can get out of the weapon, they have an entirely different perspective on what it can do and what it can't do, but mostly what it can do.
Yeah, I'll second that also, because it is a fun gun to shoot. And for those people out there, when you go to the range, because the grip is different, the, you know, how it feels in your hand is different, how you grip it is different, how it feels in your hand when you pull that trigger is different. And for those people that really enjoy shooting, like going to the range, and yes, you're practicing your defensive skills, but because it is such a different experience than your usual semi-automatic pistol, it makes the shooting experience at the range unique and fun. So yeah, I'll definitely second that. Michael, what is item number two on your reasons why the revolver can beat the auto?
Well, I'll start with the easy one. There are two reasons you're going to go to the range to practice self-defense skill. Either you're going to be passing on a skill to someone else who trusts you to be able to give them that skill, or you're trying to improve your own gun handling in no particular order. Let's start with, I would argue that the only thing equivalently fun to teaching someone else to shoot is giving yourself an opportunity to do it in a fashion that you don't generally. Let's try this. If I were come up with a couple of my top reasons that it's a self-defense tool, I'd start off with that. If you've seen one, you've seen them all. If you train on one, you've trained on them all. There are only so many ways. In fact, as far as I know, just two directions that the cylinder is going to move in. There's only three ways that you can generally work the cylinder release: forward, aft, or in. And with that, you have I don't want to call it complete mastery, but you have a substantial handle on how to manipulate the weapon. If you are going to teach yourself to shoot, I think one of the high points is being able to shoot it competently, both right-handed and left-handed. And I'll pose a question in order to move it along. If I ask someone to tell me how well they can shoot single-handed with a dominant hand, and they give me a figure of, let's say, 90%, and because the gun's not particularly difficult to shoot, I say, well, what if you do with dominant hand, right hand, one hand only? They might say, well, I'm still competent to do it about 90%. And then if you switch it over to two hands but non-dominant hand, maybe they can still squeak out 90%. But when you get to the stage that it's one-handed only, non-dominant handed, let's say they drop it down to 60% if we're lucky. And then I ask you, well, if you add those all up and divide it by four, is that a reasonable assessment of how well you shoot collectively? And generally, folks will tell you no. And I will argue, no, that 60 is your baseline for self-defense skills, because you are only as good as your absolute worst shooting skill. And one of the nice things about the revolver when you're training yourself is that it is a easy weapon to transition from a dominant hand to a dominant non-dominant hand in order to bring yourself up to an across-the-board shooting level. And if you say, well, that doesn't seem reasonable, then I would suggest this. If I were going to take a collection of handgunners who are all competent, and I wanted to move them into all dedicated non-dominant hand, single-hand shooting, I would take my revolvers, I would download them to the lightest firing rounds I could manage, and incrementally work them up, success to success sort of steps, until they were as equally competent with single-handed, non-dominant hand shooting as they are with the dominant hand. Now, you can certainly do that with a semi-automatic pistol, and you should certainly be doing that with a semi-automatic pistol, but I would argue that it is not nearly as easy to bring you to that level of competence with a pistol as it is with a revolver, if that's your goal, complete bilateral dominance with the weapon.
Yeah, and actually the way that I carry a revolver, and I won't go into the reasons why, because I don't know if I'm going to steal any thunder later on in this thing, but that makes a lot more sense given the way I use it as a backup also. So that's interesting that you say that. Okay. All right. So what is item number three on our top 10 list here?
I would argue a version of what I just said. It's training versatility. I've already noted that you can download the weapon, you can increase the power of the weapon. It is designed from the ground up to give you more versatility. There are a number of stocks that you can get are almost beyond counting. The interface between you and the grip angle can be changed readily, which is something you don't often get with a pistol. The not only traditional rounds, light kicking rounds, heavy kicking rounds, but you have a range of I call them POPs, primer only propelled training rounds. If you can't get out to the range through your quantity of shooting that you want, you have access to good ventilation and a safe area. You can shoot plastic rounds, you can shoot wax rounds, you can shoot rubber rounds, you can shoot to snap together rounds. There's a wonderful company called ConvertiPel, and they make a solid brass 38 with a hole running through the from the top to the bottom. You put a primer on one end, you drop 177 caliber airgun pellet in the top, you put in the sleeve insert, and you get some amazingly accurate, low cost, nearly no cost training tool. Something else not to miss is force on force training. Now, I'm not suggesting that you can't get force on force with all the other weapon systems, but I will argue that it is infinitely easier to set up a revolver as a force on force tool that will give you maximum safety. I have a great number of force on force revolvers. Every one of them has been fitted with discriminator rings, and they've been micro welded. The cylinders have been color coded. The stocks have been color coded, and I'm not criticizing anybody's equipment, and I'm not criticizing anybody's methodology, but when you lay a force-on-force revolver that's properly set up next to, let's say, a semi-automatic pistol, if your ejector cover is face down, you might be able to see the nub of the barrel telling you that it's been converted to a force-on-force weapon, but it's not nearly as visually evident that it's a dedicated force-on-force tool as is a properly set up revolver. So I would argue that for some shooters on some occasions, the versatility for advanced and alternative style training is a little more supportive in the argument that you can get more out of a wheel gun than you can with a pistol.
Okay, so training versatility, it covers a lot of a lot of ground there from the versatility of the weapon itself, as well as the ammunition. What was the name of the company that has that? I'm very interested in that, where you can use the BB rounds in the ammunition. Do you remember what that company is?
Yes. Yes. The company's name is Convert Appel, Convert Appel, Convert Appel. And I don't imagine you'll have much trouble if you hunt it up on the internet.
Yeah. We'll put a link in.
It's a fun round. It's an easy one to assemble.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm very curious about that. Somebody that, you know, I have my own little tactical range in my garage. So it's an interesting, I'm going to have to check that out. Okay, so that was number three, was training versatility. What's number four on our list?
All right, well, let's talk about some of the things that the revolver can do as a self-defense tool that I would argue are slight advantages over a pistol. Let's talk about malfunction drills. Now, the truth be told, it is infinitely easier to generally clear a malfunction with a semi-automatic pistol. But that's only because, in my experience, the overwhelming majority of revolver shooters, and some seriously revolver shooters, don't know the fundamentals of a malfunction clearing. And at the risk of giving a perfectly good example that I hope would be of some value to the folks on your end, let me pantomimically walk you through one. A drill we use almost on every shooting class is I will take a dummy round, I'll take one of the students, the J-frame to K-frame revolvers, we unload the cylinders, I insert the dummy round, and then I manage to get the rims under the star ejector. And that's usually the most common fear, that the star ejector will ride up over the rim during a reload, and then how do you clear it? And if you know anything about your revolvers, and I'm sure most of your participants do, you press down on the end of the star ejector. It goes to near its full length, and the clearance tolerances, especially with the short barrel J-frames and K-frames, are so tight, you can't get in underneath the star ejector to clear it. And then this is the point where somebody says, well, this is why the pistol is such a better tool. And then you walk over and you suggest to them that it's not necessarily the case. The problem is you haven't been properly taught how to clear this. And if you take the edge of the star ejector, when you press down on the ejector rod, and you can pull it farther away from the face of the cylinder, nearly doubling the clearance, at which point you can point the muzzle up, give the gun a gentle shake, and almost without fail, that round will fall out from under the star ejector. Now, I know at least one case, it's a tragic case of an officer up in California, if I remember correctly, got on the star ejector, had never been properly taught to clear it, and subsequently lost his life by trying. And I ask, and I've been asking for 30 years, why is this not a standard element of training in any revolver class anywhere? And on the off chance that you pick up a weapon, just like I know that almost all of your reader or your viewers know how to make safe a semi-automatic pistol, you should be able to make safe or clear a minimal malfunction with minimal exertion. So I would put down malfunction skills are easy to learn if you've been properly trained as a value with a revolver.
So let me kind of challenge this being on the list, because I don't know if this is, I mean, this doesn't sound necessarily like it's an advantage over the revolver. It sounds like something that definitely people that do have a revolver or that are going to carry one or have one or train with one need to know, that sort of thing. But if I could offer, I mean, malfunctions themselves are going to be generally, I don't even know if general, I mean, I would think definitely going to be much more prevalent in semi-automatic pistol, because there's so many more working parts, right? I mean, isn't there, wouldn't you argue that there's less malfunctions with a revolver because it is such a simpler thing? In fact, for semi-automatic pistols, what I find is that a lot of the malfunctions that happen are mostly because of the magazine themselves, whether they're dirty magazines, the springs aren't really working well as well anymore. They didn't load up the magazine as well. I mean, there's just lots of reasons, but it oftentimes ends up becoming a magazine. And for a revolver that doesn't actually have that magazine in those working parts, and it's a simpler structure, you're going to have less malfunctions. Wouldn't you, would you agree with that?
I think that's an excellent point. Let me try to bridge the two items.
Okay.
I'll pick up on what you just said, and I'll roll it into an actual advantage. Malfunctions with the revolver as an advantage over the pistol are almost reflexively solved. If you pull the trigger and the gun fails to fire, and you presume that the weapon is still loaded, the only thing you have to do to move up to the next round is pull the trigger again. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that that is probably the fastest malfunction clearing option of all the contemporary handguns. Now, I'm going to suggest to in order to give you another advantage, is weapon retention. Now, just from a mechanical point of view, or for a physical point of view, you have a shorter barrel. If you have a reasonable set of stocks on it, if you're on one end of the weapon and you're dealing with somebody on the other end of the weapon, because there's less of the gun on their end and there's theoretically more of the gun on your end, you have more mechanical advantage to hang on to the weapon and peel it out of someone's hand. Now, ideally, everybody with a sidearm is going to be properly trained, is going to have an opportunity to take a handgun disarming retention class. But even if that's not the case, holding on to a larger portion of the gun when dealing with somebody who has a smaller portion of the gun and who's holding essentially a rotating disc on the other end gives you an advantage in holding it. I'm also going to suggest that there's a rather unique mechanism for getting that weapon to discharge when you get in a weapon retention situation. Now, if you know your revolvers, and again, I suspect everyone who does, knows anything, is that if someone were fighting with me over the gun and were to clamp their hand on top of the cylinder, I wouldn't normally be able to get the weapon to discharge. I can compress the trigger. The problem is that with a revolver, when you compress the trigger, the hammer has to come back, the cylinder has to rotate, and then the hammer has to drop to discharge the weapon. But I'm going to argue that in that situation, the advantage is still with the revolver. You can be fighting with somebody over a semi-automatic pistol, the weapon comes out of battery, and then you have to go through the mechanisms of clearing that situation in order to get the weapon to fire. If you're hanging on to a revolver, and you've got somebody hanging on to the top of it, if you make a sharp, fast, unexpected palm up twist with your hand, what you're going to end up doing is that with the top of the cylinder seized, you can't get the gun to discharge because the cylinder needs to rotate. But if you're hanging on to that weapon when someone's hanging on to yours and you turn your hand briskly up suddenly, the cylinder will remain in place, in space, but the frame will rotate around the cylinder and you can get the weapon to discharge. Now that's an advantage I would argue that you're not going to find in a semi-automatic pistol.
Ooh, yeah, that's very ninja. Very ninja, dude. That's really cool. I'm going to have to play with that one, actually. That's gonna be a fun one to mess around with. I like that. Okay, all right, so let's go for number five here. What is number five on the list of reasons why a revolver can beat semi-auto?
All right, I'm going to suggest something a little esoteric, and you're going to have to give me a moment to defend myself. It has some of the most sophisticated safeties on the market. Now, I don't know how many other gun owners have read detective stories or mystery stories or even watch television, and then someone comes up on the television and suggest that they're going to pick up their revolver and turn on the safety, and then you figure that these folks don't know what they're talking about. At the same time, having weapons that you can make safe or not make safe with a selector switch have saved lives in weapon retention situations and if you lose control of a weapon, if you have someone come across a weapon, if it's unattended, unintentionally, not being able to make the gun go off without knowing that there's some nuanced lever is an advantage. Well, there used to be two, now there's down to three aftermarket safeties that you can apply to revolver. I had a wonderful opportunity with a friend who was in public safety, and I won't identify more than that, but he was rather unpleasant when he was assessing my equipment and suggested that my shooting gear, and by extension my self-defense gear, was set up so that the weapon would come out reasonably quickly. And his fear was that I would suddenly lose the control of the weapon if I were in proximity to somebody, and that their weapon would be turned on me and used against me or someone else. And I suggested, well, it's an interesting proposition. Let's take a look at it. We unloaded the weapons, triple checked to make sure they were clear. We got the gentleman to one side, and I said, make sure nobody crossed the muzzle. What I'm going to have you do is, without any risk for me, I want you to snatch the weapon out of the holster. Muzzle's never going to cross you. It's never going to cross me. Point the muzzle at the target. Give it a couple of dry fires. And at that point, I declare you the undisputed victor in this weapon retention contest. And he was absolutely convinced that he had me dead to rights. I gave him the go, snatched out the holster, pointed at the target, couldn't get it to go. He absolutely competent in scores, semi-automatic pistols, didn't have a clue what to do, looking like a mule staring at a wristwatch. And then when he got completely befuddled, I snatched it from his hand and with very, very subtle movement, took the safety off and got the weapon to dry fire repetitively. And then I holstered it up and suggested, why don't you stick with your pistol and I'll trust my safety to my wheel gun. And he was at minimum perplexed and at worst absolutely furious that he had been proven wrong. So there are lots of elements, a lot of aftermarket items you can apply that enhance the revolver as a self-defense tool.
So do you see, let me ask you about this, because I've always seen it actually as like I'm not a big fan of safeties, just with my own personal defensive gear and everything. And so I think one of the advantages of the revolver is that typically you don't have a safety on, usually you don't have, like in my guns, I don't have a safety on it. The safety is typically, it's harder to pull that trigger. It's not going to be like a semi-automatic trigger pull where it's going to be a lot easier to do that. And so it's kind of like a built-in, in a way, it's kind of a built-in safety-ish mechanism. So I've always seen that as a benefit to it. But you're talking about putting on an aftermarket, like you do like to have a safety on your revolver?
Well, I'll answer both questions. I think there are two in there. I work as a police investigator, that's my technical title, I don't think it's really what I do, in a suburb just near Boston, in housing projects. And I still use a revolver. I'm a firm advocate that if you want to take training from somebody, you want to take it from somebody who carries a pistol but teaches a revolver, somebody carries a revolver and teaches a revolver. That's not, again, I'm not denigrating anybody, it's just the way I prefer to do that. And because I'm in contact with a goodly number of folks, not all of which have the best intentions, it strikes me as advantageous to have some discreet, nearly invisible additional safety. I'm a belt and suspender guy. I have a lot of doubt about trusting 100% of everything 100% of the time. To go back to your, so the answer on certain circumstances, under certain conditions, I think having a safety that nobody else can find, but that you can turn on and off reflexively is an enormous safety advantage. Now, let's go talk about being able to grab the gun when you want. I understand the theory, and I'm not going to denigrate it. But that being said, nobody is going to be in control of their firearm when it's not in the safe 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the remainder of your life and beyond. You can get sick. You can be moved away from your home. You may be responding to someplace in the interest of your family, and you're not going to be able to bring a weapon because it's a weapon-free environment. And you're going to need to go someplace and secure it, and you may not have the latitude to secure it in your home, in your safe. Now, I don't think anyone dislikes the frame-mounted safeties, or the frame-mounted revolver locks more than I do. And there's nothing you're going to get out of me that's going to tell you that I defend that. But having it mandated is different than having it optional. And being able to secure the weapon in addition to being secure of the weapon. And I'm being redundant here. If I can turn the weapon in a condition, or I can render the weapon in a condition that if I ever lose control of it, sickness, travel, what have you, or the normal wear and tear, we all make some mistakes. Nobody can claim that they are flawless when it comes to day-to-day conduct. And no matter how many times we try to layer our self-defense systems, or more importantly, our safety protocols, the reason we have safety protocols and layered safety protocols is because we all know that eventually we're going to make a mistake. And we want to make sure that when that mistake comes to pass, we don't cause harm. Well, if I can render the firearm inert on command, and I can take away that inert status on command, and few, if anyone else, knows the trick to that, then I have given myself an advantage that I'm going to suggest that historically is a provable advantage. We've got untold number of officers who've been saved over the decades when their semi-automatic pistols have been put on safe, or there was a snatch attempt while the weapon was on safe and the bad guy wasn't able to get the weapon to go off. But once the weapon was recovered by the officer, he or she was able to turn it on immediately. So I'm going to fall back that I don't have to be, no one has to agree with me, but in my mind's eye, being able to have that option is a distinct advantage.
Yeah, that's an interesting safety mechanism too that you're talking about. One that's kind of like invisible, or it's not reflexive that somebody, even if they knew guns, would be able to get to. That's interesting. Okay. All right, listen, everybody, we've been talking with Michael DeBethencourt of imwithrosco.com about why the revolver actually can beat a semi-automatic pistol for defensive carry. But just in case the first five reasons didn't convince you, we have five more coming right up. But first, check out this special message.
What if everything you knew about how to stop a violent attacker with your gun was wrong? Discover the advanced tactics you must know now to protect yourself and those you love with a firearm. Check out our free book, Stopping Power Secrets. Inside, you'll find such no-hold-barred shockers as 1. The three most common myths and misinformation shoveled out by movies and gun range know-it-alls that could get you killed in a real-life gunfight. 2. The cold, hard truth about your personal weapon's ability to be a one-shot man-stopper. 3. What coroners know about selecting the right ammo for your firearm that you don't. 4. And the simple training trick used by Abrams tank crews and commercial airline pilots that will prepare you for a real attack, even better than your best day at the range. Don't place your family's safety in the hands of Hollywood fairy tales and hearsay. Claim your free copy of Stopping Power Secrets now at www.stoppingpowersecrets.com. And now, back to the show.
Okay, we're back with Michael DeBethencourt of imwithrosco.com and loading up the next five reasons why a revolver can be better than a semi-automatic pistol as a defense, self-defense weapon. So let's go ahead and jump back into our interview now. All right, Michael, so we're on the last five here. We're in the home stretch. So what is number six on the list of top 10 reasons
why a weapon
can beat semi-auto?
I'm going to take exception to the last five. I haven't even got to the last 55, but we'll take them in the order you suggest. I'm going to try to finish it up with being a little bit more focused on self-defense applications. And I'm going to back it up a little, give you a little back story, and then see if I can get you to see where I came from. I had two occasions where officer friends of mine ended up in situations where they required a firearm, but for a lot of mechanical reasons, where they were going and what they were doing and who they were with, they didn't have a weapon. And I remember thinking at the time that the problem was that while they were all trained professionals, weather, location, what had you, made it impractical to carry a full-size self-defense weapon. So I went out looking for a compromise, a solution. I wanted to find the smallest available package to hold the maximum amount of power and make it possible that I could carry a self-defense weapon 24/7 the remainder of my life and still feel reasonably competently armed to face a vast majority of what could be reasonably assumed to be realistic situations. And after an enormous amount of research and enormous amount of soul searching, I came to the conclusion that you cannot beat a small five-shot, 38 or better caliber handgun. Now, there are many semi-automatic pistols that have an enormous amount of power out of them, but you pay a penalty for that. You generally pay a penalty in size, and you definitely pay a penalty in weight. But if you're looking for a tiny machine, a self-defense tool that you can feel reasonably confident that if you do your job, you can get a violent attacking human being, suspend their assault. You're going to be hard-pressed to find something more effective that balances size and power. I'm not recommending that any go get a scantium or titanium 357J frame and then load it with the hottest 357 you can. But you can get away with a short-barreled SP-101 and load it with 357 if you feel comfortable with that. You can get yourself an airweight Colt, or more appropriately, perhaps, an airweight Smith & Wesson, and load it with hot or very hot 38 and still get an enormous amount of power in a very, very tiny package. And I would argue that all things being equal, size for size, you can take your small, flat 380s and 9s and what have you, and from muzzle to hammer to the base of the butt, you're not going to get the equivalent amount of power out the front of that weapon as you can with a properly loaded 357. So as far as self-defense weapons, you get an enormous amount of power if you can handle it in an incredibly small package. And I would argue that that is, in its own way, if not a complete advantage, certainly an equivalency with any contemporary semi-automatic pistol out there.
Okay. Yep. I'll definitely go with that one. Go along with that one, especially since a lot of people, when considering revolvers, even if you're just looking at one, not as a primary defensive weapon, but as a backup, do you want to be carrying around a whole bunch of weight with you and a whole bunch of size with you? Typically, no, you don't want to. So even as a backup gun, if you, it has a lot of advantages there as well. So another good option there. All right. So number seven, what is number seven on our list, Michael?
A classic and one completely underappreciated, at least truly underappreciated, pocket fire capability. We all get the chance to watch some of the videos from across the world where someone has had to access a firearm in defense of themselves or someone else. And universally, the lag time between recognizing the threat and then clearing your cover guard and whatever that is, and then getting the weapon can be disadvantageous enough that you end up with tragedies. If you believe yourself in a situation, in an environment where you need to be carrying a self-defense tool, you want to be able to access it quickly. Or failing that, if you have your antenna out and you realize this isn't the right place and the right time and I need to be moving out of here, because there's a definite safety threat coming, it is infinitely easier to reach into your pocket, particularly an overcoat pocket, a jacket pocket, what have you, put your hand on the weapon, and then you already have three quarters of the fight prepped. Because if you get accosted, if you have someone come up and threaten your safety to the extent that you believe you're going to face imminent and unavoidable loss of life or a crippling injury, you don't have to clear the weapon. It's already in the concealed position, it's already in your hand, and you can discharge it. And if you need to repeatedly discharge it, you can certainly do that with greater ease with a shrouded hammered weapon, a revolver, or an internally hammered weapon like a Centennial. I know at least one officer acquaintance of mine who was in New York heading off to vacation, was set upon by two junkies, one armed with a pistol, one armed with an edge weapon, and he wasn't in a position to reach for the full-size weapon on his hip, but he was in a position to reach for his overcoat and access a weapon, and then he subsequently, fire the weapon, struck the first junkie, and took control of the second. A very common trick that we bring in class is we get a lot of old, discarded, embarrassing is it to say, slacks. I had the seamstress cut them off at the bottom of the pockets, We sew up the bottom of the cuffs, and then instead of going down to the range to practice your shooting through coat drills with reasonably hard to replace, even if they're worn out coats, you can slip your firearm and your hand down the length of this sewn tight pocket, and you can practice shooting against the targets. And for the price of two or three disposable pants at the Salvation Army, you can spend the whole day practicing pocket fire. And I would argue that that's a skill that you're not going to find as easily replicated with a semi-automatic pistol where you've got a slide reciprocating.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing, I think the other advantages when it comes to pocket fire also is, one, the grip of the of a revolver is easier to grab onto, so it's than it is for a semi-automatic pistol typically. So it's going to be easier to get to, especially if you have to get into your pocket quickly and it's some sort of like a hold-up situation. And then also just even firing the gun multiple times, whereas if it's a semi-auto in that same situation inside of a pocket, that expended brass might not fully eject because it might be hitting the side of your pocket. I mean, it might be pushing that brass back into the ejector port there, as opposed to a revolver, that thing's just got to turn, especially if you've got like a shrouded hammer on it where you don't have to worry about that thing snagging. You really just can't beat it. You just can't beat it for pocket fire. So I love that. I love that tip. Awesome. All right, Michael. So what is number 8 on our list of our top 10 reasons here?
I'm going to suggest that we bring this full circle. Let's presume for a moment that you've actually had to use a firearm in self-defense. I presume also that you've done everything right. I'm going to argue that at some point when the officers arrive, they're going to have to bag all this equipment. They're going to separate you from the gun and any other ancillary equipment. And as esoteric as it might be, and I'm more than willing to defend this at length, is that having a revolver after you've been disarmed by the responding police is safer for everybody involved. If you put that revolver down and the muzzle's in a safe direction and the officer picks it up and keeps the muzzle in a safe direction, you can bag that gun until they can get it to somebody who's obviously competent to open the weapon and unload it properly with minimal chance of inadvertently hurting somebody, yourself, the officer, witnesses, what have you. Again, in no way, shape, or form am I suggesting that the revolver should go back to replacing the semi-auto. That is never, ever my goal. My goal is to argue that both weapons have an enormous number of advantages, and we should take full advantages, all of them, depending on the situations, and we should be cognizant of what all those advantages are. So in that vein, I would suggest that if you have a cocked and unlocked semi-automatic pistol, and with all due respect to all the officers absolutely everywhere, not every officer is going to be a gun enthusiast, and the situation may require that the officer feels for his or her safety that the weapon has to be moved from location A to location B, and that just seems like a frighteningly risky proposition based on all the exigent circumstances, whereas if the officer is forced to move a weapon that he or she is not overly familiar with, the revolver is a safer choice for folks after you've used it in self-defense.
Okay. All right. Works for me. All right. What is number 9 on our list?
I'm going to pick up one step beyond that. When you get to defend your actions in front of judge and jury, they're going to get to see your weapons on the evidence table. And I would argue that viscerally, we have a culture that has been raised for generations to believe that, first of all, revolver is a little antiquated, perhaps borderline quaint. Certainly a weapon that all the major and minor heroes of many of the men and women who are going to be on that jury remember, from the Lone Ranger on forward. The wheel gun has always been the beat cop's sidearm. It's always been the hero detective's sidearm. It's always been the merchant or the banker's. a concealed item. And yet we now live in a culture where every bad guy in every video and every film is carrying semi-automatics. And when they see those semi-automatics, they associate an enormous amount of rounds running downrange. And it's not difficult to imagine that all things being equal, the men and women who will know absolutely nothing about firearms, if they know anything about guns, they're probably never going to get on that jury, and they're certainly not going to hear your case, and they're not going to understand your point of the view. If they're going to have to make a decision whether you get to home with your family that evening or if you're going to go someplace else and make a new family for a long time, I would rather the emotional, the visceral, the psychological advantages that imply that this is fundamentally the good guy's weapon and not necessarily something that they associate with the bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, thinking about after the shooting is what a lot of people don't really think about. They think pretty much just about the tactics that it takes to be able to survive, which is great, you know, better to be, you know, judged by 12 than carried by 6. I get that whole thing, but nonetheless, that's great until you're judged by 12 and you're right, you're making a new family somewhere off in shower land and behind some barbed wire. So, okay, so let's go ahead and get down to number 10 here on our list for why the revolver can beat the semi-auto.
I'm going to bring it full circle and then give you an example and then sort of a mental challenge. I started by suggesting that it was a fun gun, and I'm going to conclude by suggesting that without being redundant, discovering the scores and scores of nearly lost nuances of manipulating gun is more fun than you can anticipate. There are a number of classic self-defense and revolver support tools. We've got dump pouches, loop carriers, 2x2 pouches, speed strips, speed loaders, the second backup gun. And by the way, when you make the snub your backup gun to whatever you carry, the moment you put your hand on that, by definition, becomes your primary gun. And I always say, if you only carry that snub one day a year, random fate being what it is, you better be the war god of that gun if you need to manipulate it. But I'm going to go back to being a fun gun. The nuances that you can pick up, the nuances on how to manipulate it and manipulate all the reloading tools is not so much a challenge as is a puzzle to uncover and discover. And when you get down to the range and you have these 5 or 6 reloading tools in front of you, and you have to go through the machinations and manipulations, and you're going to find that there, with every single time that you use them, you will discover something new about the men who used it before you, more how you can optimize it. Something as simple as learning how to use loose rounds. If you ended up snatching a speed loader and that speed loader were to come apart, and you now know how to fundamentally manipulate loose rounds rapidly, there are scores of self-defense skills that you can walk away with when you're practicing with the multiple self-defense reloading tools that are currently still on the market. Hmm.
Okay, awesome. So this is, man, you've talked about a lot of stuff here. The other thing I wanted to add in here, just based upon one of the things that you brought up, was that is the simplicity of it. And in that, you might have, like for me, I had family members who weren't a family member. My wife was not a fan of any firearm whatsoever until that moment of clarity hits them when there's somebody in the house and all of a sudden I'm not available to be able to help out there. And so this is somebody who did not go to the range, did not learn how to use the complicated, quote unquote, you know, semi-automatic pistol, or wouldn't know how to deal with a malfunction or anything like that. But I always knew that that revolver that I had, if worse came to worse, and she had to hunker down in the safe room and just needed something between her and a bad guy trying to get in there, that all she would have to do with that revolver, didn't take any training or anything, just point it, pull that trigger, and she'd at least be able to defend herself when that moment came. So that's another thing I think is really powerful for people to really understand that it's not always just about you protecting your family and yourself. It could be another family member who doesn't even know about guns, not even train with guns. But as Michael said, you know, it's something that we've seen in movies. We know how to point and pull a trigger. And if there's no other mechanisms that they need to worry about, it makes it a very simple thing that somebody can use for home defense, be able to take care of themselves and be self-reliant. So that's another thing I just wanted to add in there. Michael, this is a lot of great information here. I know this was just kind of the tip of the iceberg of all the reasons why you've said in the past and written so many times about the advantages of a revolver and why it should really be looked at for a defensive weapon. So why don't you just take a few minutes here. I'm really curious about this new project that you have with I'm With Roscoe. Can you just tell people a little bit about it, like who it might be for and who might want to go check it out?
I'd be thrilled. I'm With Roscoe is a noir themed snub shooting association. We have been out for about 2 years. We've got about 4,000 members so far, and we are literally spread across the world. I wanted to be able to go down to the range with a few friends. I had, in my mind's eye, a very straightforward format. I wanted to get one box of ammunition and my short barrel 38, and I wanted to use all the classic 38 reloading tools I mentioned a moment or two ago. And I was going to shoot seven stages with seven rounds a stage, something that would be wouldn't be particularly expensive to master or to manage. And I wanted to make sure that when I was scoring my performance, that we didn't ask anybody to shoot against truly competent shooters, because there's no fun in that. And one of the things that we do a little bit different than just about anyone else is that when you download our directions and you download our target and you go out and you shoot it and you get your scores up on the scoreboard, as we call it, when you come back, if you're shooting a 15 out of a possible 100 and the other guy is shooting a 95 out of a possible 100, and you come back a week and a half later and you give it a second try and you go from 15 to 25 and that gentleman goes from 95 to 95, we don't send him any awards. We send you prizes. If you keep moving up the competence level, you're never ever shooting against the local ringer. You're always shooting against the last guy who shot against you, and that was you. The other thing that we like to do is we like to look good doing it. I couldn't afford all the accoutrement for the cowboy action shooting, and I thought, well, at base minimum, I could afford a nice Panama hat, or when the weather was cold, a fedora. And I told the guys if they were willing to come and get themselves a good-looking hat, 50 rounds of 38, and a revolver, we could put on a show. And it took off like a skyrocket. Currently, of all the things that we could offer in order to encourage folks to join us, is that we put out an electronic newsletter every 2 weeks. We put out a print publication every 6 months. I've been on the line with over 100 manufacturers of revolver-related materials. We've got 25 of them so far to offer us discounts. And when I talk to the guys about joining our association, and I run through the growing list of all the advantages we can give them, I always tell them that when you pick up our publication, every single individual you see advertised, we don't charge for the advertising. What we do is we trade them. If they will give our members a 10% discount on whatever their revolver-related item is, we will give them a quarter-page ad. So when you look at our magazine, not only is it written by all the revolver instructors who used to be competitors but always friends, so you get an enormous amount of revolver-related training with absolutely every issue. If you decide that you want to buy a new speed loader, you want to try somebody's new holster, you want to try somebody's recommended 2x2 pouch, you can look them up on the magazine, call that individual up, order it, and get a discount. And I tell all the members constantly, the more members we get, the more clout we have in the marketplace, the more clout we have, the more manufacturers we bring in, and it becomes a circle. And most importantly, all you have to do to join is have a swing out revolver. Short barrel would be nice, but it's not a requirement. 50 rounds of ammunition and a willingness to go down the range. And that's about the sum total of the bar you have to cross in order to become one of our one of our shooting participants.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. I know you're all about fun. So everybody listen, whether you have been a Revolver fan in the past or not, I was not originally a long time ago. I was always like a semi-automatic guy, but Michael has been, actually, I will give him credit, has been one of the guys that has helped bring me over to the other side. And I've never looked back ever since really realizing how it fit into my in my personal defensive weapon platform that I carry with every day. So so I really appreciate all the work that he's done, even with just with keeping that the snub-nosed revolver and other revolvers out there on people's minds as a true defensive weapon. So thanks so much for that. And listen, go check them out on their website. It's you can one thing you can always be sure with Michael, whether it's his training or whether it's his writing or whether it's any of the other training they're put out there, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to you're going to have a few laughs with it. So definitely go check it out. Their new initiative over at www.imwithrosco.com. And until our next Modern Combat Survival broadcast, this is Jeff Anderson saying, prepare, train, and survive.
Modern Combat and Survival.
We hope you've enjoyed the show. You can help us out by rating our podcast on iTunes and leaving a comment. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/Modern Combat and Survival. And don't forget to claim your free subscription to Modern Combat and Survival magazine at www.moderncombatandsurvival.com. Lock and load. And we'll see you next time. This has been Modern Combat and Survival.